Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Deciding what items your baby might need can be overwhelming, but when it came to choosing the perfect pushchair to keep my little one safe, secure, and comfortable, I turned straight to Bugaboo. Now, their range is beautifully designed, easy to use, built to last. In fact, I know that I will definitely be passing mine down to friends and family in years to come. You can even customize your Bugaboo by mixing and matching the colors of the canapé, fabrics, and base color. To find out more about Bugaboo and their product range, visit bugaboo.com.
Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to Food for Thought, a podcast on a mission to equip you with all the evidence-based advice that you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, registered nutritionist, best-selling author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In each episode, I'll be joined by special guests, all of whom can be considered authoritative voices in health, so that together we can learn fact from fiction and empower the healthiest and happiest versions of ourselves with trusted, expert advice. Children need nutritious food every day to grow healthy and strong. Yet feeding them, and especially a newborn, can be an around-the-clock commitment. It's also an opportunity to begin forming the closest bond with the newest member of the family. Now, the biggest challenge is feeding patterns, as they can be very unpredictable, and with everyone having their own opinion as to how best to feed their baby, and supermarket shelves stocked high with different formulas and foods, it can be really confusing. This week's Food for Thought sees registered nutritionist Charlotte Sterling Reed share exactly what, when, and how to feed your baby. Hello, Charlotte.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. Well, it's nice to have you on again, which is good. So yeah, we had you in, I think it was series two.
Talking about pregnancy.
Pregnancies. But we're talking more about the fact that we're feeding, starting off life with a newborn. I mean, does everybody have a different preference about birth, let's say? Does every baby have a different outlook after birth on the way they're raised?
I think it's really difficult to say. I guess, you know, I think that's one thing that I talk about throughout all of my kind of advice, is that babies are different. You know, your birth will be different. The way you cope after birth will be different to somebody else. You know, the way that your baby responds to milk or food or breastfeeding or whatever it is, it's just always different. And I think, you know, you can't really plan for a lot of that. So some parts of it are kind of getting your research in, getting your confidence up, and then the other part of it is going with the flow.
Yeah, going with the flow. And obviously it's a very big unknown area. And for anyone listening that's maybe going to be parent to be soon, or you're already a new parent, I'm sure you're experiencing all sorts of highs and lows on a daily basis. So at what point then would you say you should start weaning your baby?
Well, that's a good question. It's actually quite controversial, because, you know, we've talked before about different countries have different guidelines around things, and but in the UK, you know, fairly recently we've updated our guidance to say that we recommend babies start introducing their food, solid foods, around 6 months. So although that has been the case in the UK for quite a long time now, we've recently kind of made it very, very clear clear. So we do tend to say around 6 months of age is an appropriate time to start introducing solids to a baby.
Yeah. And I've obviously heard of stories where some mums are like, oh, I just knew my baby was ready. And perhaps they start at 5 months. I mean, is that detrimental?
So, no, it's a good question. And again, you know, I think that when we talk about guidance, we have to realise that it is guidance for everybody. Whereas children, as we've said, they are so different. And I think it's really important to remember they reach milestones at different times. So some babies crawl really early, some don't crawl at all. Some babies, you know, start walking early or talking early. And it's exactly the same with weaning. Some babies might be ready earlier than 6 months. If you do feel that before 6 months your baby's ready, it is really good to have a chat with a healthcare professional, because ultimately you want to be looking out for signs that they are ready. So regardless of age, yes, looking to as close to 6 months as possible, that's why we say around, but looking out for signs that baby is ready is a better kind of indication of whether they'll be able to take and accept those solid foods.
Right, so what would those key signs, I suppose, be?
So lots of signs kind of get thrown about online, and I would say that, you know, things like baby paying attention to food, baby chewing fists, baby being interested in watching you eating, those definitely might indicate an interest, but they also can be other things. So it might just be part of their developmental process. Signs that we're really looking out for is the fact that babies should be able to sit up with limited support or minimal support, hold their head and neck steady. They should be able to see food, reach out, pick it up and put it in their mouth all by themselves. And then last but not least, they should be able to swallow food. So less of a tongue thrust reflex. So if you put your finger on the bottom of your baby's lip and their tongue comes really far out, it means they might not be quite ready and you might see them doing that with foods. As soon as they start to get more ready, around 6 months of age, that tongue thrust starts to diminish and you'll see they'll be able to take more food in than they spit out, basically.
Gosh, there's
three signs.
Yeah, a good amount of three signs. And I mean, I guess a question that I'm sure lots of listeners are probably thinking is, what about the quantities of the food? I mean, how much attention should you be giving to that as well at the beginning?
And that's a question that parents really do have on their lips. They are always wanting to know how much. Now, ultimately, first of all, I would say at the very start, we're starting with tiny amounts, you know, a couple of spoonfuls given to baby and just see what happens. Some babies take to food right away and will go, yep, give me that and I'll have more. And other babies are a bit reluctant, so it can take them a good few weeks before they even start taking those couple of spoonfuls. So again, individual, what does your baby want? But just remember that there are no portion size guides with babies and they are very good at their own appetite regulation. So as long as you set up and establish a nice routine for them, allow them to decide how much they want at those mealtimes.
And that's the baby-led weaning, isn't it? Just the fact that you should really be paying attention to recognising that they can regulate themselves, if only we still retain that as human beings.
Completely.
Ability.
It's really easy to override those internal cues of, you know, yes, I'm hungry, yes, I'm full. But children are born being able to self-regulate. And, you know, there's a lot of research looking into self-regulation around milk, but it's also very true around food. So yes, it is the concept of, you know, we call it responsive feeding, and it's this idea of being responsive to your baby's cue. So if they are holding their mouth open and suggesting they want more, allow them to have more. If they're clamping their mouth shut, turning their head away, you know, and I've seen this happen time and time again, stop the meal. You know, try not to coax or force or press your baby to take more than they want, because you're going to be overriding their internal signals. And exactly as you say, that's just not what we want.
No, and I think it can really help develop probably unhealthy eating patterns for your child growing up, the more that we try and stick to this rigid, perhaps even time frame. But what about the variety as well? Because we talk about variety for gut health in adults, but of course, for a baby starting out, surely you want a lot.
Completely. Variety is so, so, so key. I see lots of kind of other nutritionists and dietitians. I think it's really popular in America to do this kind of 100 foods before one, which I really love. Like, I definitely didn't count them myself, but variety is everything. So the more foods your baby is exposed to when they're younger, the more likely they are to, you know, develop really wide and versatile eating patterns as they get older. So, you know, we quite often, you know, so often I speak to parents who'll say, well, I started off with baby rice for the first couple of weeks, which is fine, but obviously variety is what we want. So if you are starting off with whatever it is, just think, you know, multiple different vegetables, multiple different fruits.
Even if it may sound odd to us, the combination, it doesn't matter for a baby, does it?
Yeah,
so you can be out there.
Definitely. They don't have perceived ideas. They don't expect like a Michelin star put together meal. You know, it is just about experimenting. And some of those tastes your baby will go bleh and spit out, and others of them they'll gobble up, and that's okay. If they spit some out, it doesn't mean they don't like it. It just might be new or a surprise. So keep up the variety. And honestly, one of my biggest tips is always variety. If you've got a fussy eater, vary how much they're having. If you're worried about how what your little one's eating, don't worry, just vary the foods, because ultimately, you know, same as for adults, that's what's key.
I mean, just because we wouldn't have stereotypically for breakfast, I don't know, aubergine and oats, who knows?
Brilliant.
Maybe for a child, that's a very a random example.
No, but it's a perfect example, because absolutely, do it.
A child won't know. And what about the puree debate? Because there's a lot of people that don't even want to go to purees now, which I've been hearing a lot about, but equally they're everywhere and it could be very surely beneficial.
Yeah, so this is a big debate, and actually I do love talking about this question, because some parents are real advocates of the baby-led, where you simply just start with pieces of food and you allow your little one to feed themselves and just kind of go with the flow, and that's fine. But also there is another approach, which is the fact that you can also offer foods off of a spoon. You know, you can start with thin purees initially and then get those thicker and thicker, so baby's experiencing a wide variety of textures. If baby is under 6 months when you start, I would always say to start with a puree or a something off of a spoon, because babies might not yet have quite the dexterity to be able to deal with larger, harder textures of food. But if you do start with a puree, that's fine. But at 6 months, you really can start thinking more about mashing rather than blending. You don't want necessarily liquidy foods from 6 months. It needs to be a little bit of texture in there, ideally.
I mean, you mentioned, of course, the baby's dexterity, but even the development. I think a lot of people forget that your child is growing, so of course their digestive tract and everything else are changing surely at that time. So what really happens internally when you start to feed your baby actual food? What are the key changes that someone would notice or a parent?
Well, the thing is, you might not notice much. I mean, you know, between 4 and 6 months, their digestive system, their immune system is really starting to develop, so that they are able to start accepting foods when they get to around 6 months. It's one of the reasons why we say that a sign of them being ready is them being able to sit up, you know, because you want them to have their digestive system so that it's all in one line. Essentially, they can sit up, they can concentrate, not necessarily on keeping their trunk steady, but instead of that, their trunk is nice and steady because they can sit up, they can use their hands to pick up food, and they can concentrate on the movement of those hands and learning that kind of coordination.
Is that all the throwing of things
around? Lobbing the food at your hair and on the floor. But yeah, I mean, you wouldn't necessarily notice anything as a parent. You obviously, they're bowels will change, and that's something I get so many parents write to me and say, I've just started weaning and my baby's completely changed, you know, the way that they poo, essentially. And that's really normal, you know, you're adding something totally new to their digestive system.
It will
become much more adult like much more smelly, much more, you know, lots of different colors you'll see in there. So, and that is all completely normal,
which I think will reassure a lot of parents if you've suddenly gone from, I don't know, greeny color poop to
sweet corn,
the classic one. I mean, and what about growth? Would some parents see a growth spurt maybe at this time as well?
Yeah, it's a good question. Again, you know, babies, one of the reasons why babies are so individual and we can't say this is how much they need to eat at this age is the fact that they all grow and develop at different rates as well. You know, the first year and then the first and the second year are the most significant periods of growth. I think in the first year, babies something like triple their birth weight in that first year. So they are growing so much. And the majority of brain development also happens in the first couple of years of life. So it's a really significant period of growth that whole time, which is why food and nutrition and even stimulation and what you're you're doing with your baby is so significant. But they will all grow at different times. You may very well see them start to have a growth spurt, and you will probably notice that by the fact that they will want to eat a lot more food. So that's another reason why go with their appetite regulation. If they don't want food and they're not fancying it, it might just be that they're not growing, they're not feeling well, they're tired. But if all of a sudden you're noticing, my God, I cannot fill you up, it might just be they're having a growth spurt and they need the extra.
And alongside, I mean, this is so informative and so useful. And I think, again, everyone's unique. Babies are unique. That's something that we should be hammering home. And with breastfeeding or, of course, formula, whichever the parent has decided or is able to do at that time, that would continue perhaps alongside?
Yeah, absolutely. So we used to, we still do refer to it as weaning, but actually some bodies prefer you not to call it weaning, because weaning is associated with weaning baby off of milk. Whereas actually, no, milk is still really important. And right up until a year and beyond, if you're breastfeeding, milk is still recommended to make a significant contribution to baby's diet. The only thing is, as you go through the weaning journey and as baby moves from one meal to two meals to three meals and starts to eat bigger amounts, you probably will see the amount of milk they take to really gradually and really naturally start to decline. So it doesn't happen quickly. It's not like 6 months they have food and no milk. They still have milk alongside. It's called complementary feeding. So it's essentially food to fill the gap between nutrient and energy needs that milk can't on its own provide anymore, essentially.
I mean, some of my clients do night feeds after having a day of solid food. But when would you say, because this again, I think there's so many controversial areas.
So many.
And it's only purely, I think we need to reiterate, we never come from a place of judgment on this podcast. It's just purely sharing information, just having a chat. But when would you say would be the cutoff point in terms of stopping an extra feed alongside? I mean, is it one? Is it two? Is it three? This is the...
good question. So in terms of when would you, you know, start to intentionally reduce your feeds? Yeah, that's a good question. And honestly, parents really struggle with it. Yeah. But there's no definitive answer, as with everything. There's no definitive answer. It's really about your baby's own pace. It's about, you know, trying to work out. Basically, what I normally say is structure your baby's day as much as you can. So you've got routines around things like sleep, around when you offer them solid food, and roughly around when they're milk feeding as well. Once you've got that nice structure in place, you can start to really build on those foods. Some babies take to foods right away and will just be like, you know what, I'm not that bothered with milk. But because milk's still important, I always say keep offering it. If baby's not taking much, add it into baby's food. But other babies will still rely a bit more on milk. So it really does vary. I would say NHS essentially say that at about 7 months of age, babies should be having a roughly around 600 mils. And at 10 months, that drops to more like 400. So you can see there's that kind of 3 months where there's a natural decline. And I would be saying if your baby is still having a huge amount of milk at 10 months, you might want to think about dropping a feed. But go at baby's own pace, ultimately.
Yeah, this is the thing. I think you really have to follow your baby a little bit as well.
Completely.
And nutrition's obviously our jam. What are the things that parents, I hate using this word, but I'm going to use it for the sake of getting the information out there. What should they avoid when weaning?
Okay, yeah, good question. Yeah, there are some foods to avoid. I mean, you're absolutely right. In you know, day-to-day general information, we don't like to talk about avoiding food unless it is, you know, poisonous. Yeah. But when it comes to babies, there are some foods you need to avoid. So obviously alcohol and caffeine should not be given to babies,
I hope.
But also salt and sugar. So babies do not need added salt or free sugars. They do not need those in their diet, because they will get more than enough from, you know, the rest of the diet that they can have. They have really, really minimal amounts of salt and sugar that they need to have in their diet. So keeping added salt and added sugar off the menu is really important.
What would be the worst thing that would happen if you see a child at that young age having extreme amounts, I suppose, but unwittingly.
Well, for example, salt. I mean, it does happen. You know, we have heard really extreme cases where babies have been very unwell from things like having too much salt. Their kidneys just aren't able to deal with large amounts of salt. And also with sugar, you know, first of all, it's about developing tastes. So babies might develop a preference and a taste for those kind of flavours. And you're likely for them to, you know, give them a broccoli after they've had a bit of Haribo and it's just not going to go down well. Not that you should ever be giving babies Haribo. But, you know, it's just about really setting up preferences and making sure they're not over consuming, you know, those. There will be salt in things. So some breakfast cereals, you know, some pastas, bread.
Some children's products. And children's products, we were both looking at a post that we saw online recently looking at labelling on food and how difficult it can actually be for parents to tell. Some items will be labelled as natural or good for you or veggie sticks, for instance, and maybe they're not full of veg or any
of it. Completely. Do you know what? I've been having this conversation all day from sharing that post with parents who were just, you know, really worried, I think, about the labelling. But I'd say the most important thing is try and give your baby foods that you cook from home. Obviously, that's the ideal. But, you know, we know that convenience foods are fine every now and then. You know, the baby pouches, yes, absolutely. If you are out on the go in a rush, then they are fine, but just try and be a bit savvy, do your research, check back a pack, and ultimately check that ingredient list, because you know you want to have a look at that. If you see salt and sugar on an ingredients list on food for baby, put it back. That's what I would say.
That's the best advice ever. I mean, all too often you see parents getting in a bit of trouble because the preference their baby has gone often it's sweet as well, isn't it? I think a lot of the fruit pouches at a very early age. So would you recommend trying to go for more veggie-based things earlier on?
Definitely. So I'm a massive advocate of veg-led weaning. I love the concept of starting off with veggies, continuing to offer veggies through the rest of their weaning journey, and just offer them in real variety. I'm a real advocate of it. And I think we've always been kind of programmed to start babies off with sweet things like baby rice, which is fairly sweet and often has added sweetness to it.
It's
as well.
It's like a rice pudding, I
suppose. Yeah, sometimes, also, you know, things like apple puree, pear puree, super sweet, you know, think of like apple sauce, it really is. And that's what we've been offering babies, but babies are born with a preference for sweet food, and the way I look at it is they don't need they don't need any help to accept those tastes, but they do need help to accept more sour, bitter and umami flavors. So for me, weaning is all about a journey of teaching them to like new foods. So I say start with bitter and savoury veggies and then just start to build in all the other food groups, including sweeter options like sweet potatoes and carrots and strawberries and cherries around that.
And it's important even for anyone listening that we classify sweet potatoes and carrots as quite a sweet type of vegetable or food anyway, because it can be confusing. So for any parent listening that's has the luxury now of starting from scratch, do you take that advice? But what about for someone who started off perhaps unwittingly on a more fruit-heavy diet and now they're finding,
struggling,
not wanting the veg?
Well, I get parents write to me every day about that. You know, so often they'll write and they say, I think I've messed up my baby. Oh. And I'm like, no, you absolutely haven't. You know, so many babies have been weaned on apple puree initially and they're absolutely fine. Please don't worry. But the main thing I would say is it's never too late to start trying to help them to alter some of those taste preferences. If babies are very used to sweet tastes, it's, you know, they are going to have a preference, so they're going to choose those over others. It's simply about trying to expand their palate, so just keep adding in those more savoury and bitter
persistence
flavours.
Well. Isn't persistence, isn't it?
And role modelling. Let them see you eating some broccoli, because then they're more likely to go, okay, I'll try some broccoli. It won't happen overnight, I promise you, but it's this kind of persistence, consistent approach, lots of role modelling, just subtly adding those foods in without raising the attention or taking away the other food. It's all just about a gentle, gradual approach.
And if you're a parent-to-be, this is a question I'm sure, again, you get all the time, Charlotte, but if you are being persistent, say you're on try number 7 or try number 8 at something, and then you're worried your baby was going to go without, because what do you do? Do you cave in and give them the sweet thing that you know they will eat, or do you just go without?
It's a really tough one. So yeah, when it comes to alternatives and young babies, well, I would say that, you know, again, you have to try and go with their appetite. So you have to try and look at the context of the situation. Is my baby refusing this food because they do not like it. They genuinely don't like it. And if that is the case, then it might be worthwhile offering that food alongside other foods that you know your baby does like. It's not to say that, you know, they probably won't eat it, but maybe the next time they will, and at least you know they won't go hungry. But ultimately, if it's not to do with the fact that they don't like it, or it's new, they're just, you know, having a tantrum, or they're just not fancying food that day, then that's okay. It's all again about listening to their own signs. So we do recommend, especially in older children and toddlers, not offering alternatives, because as soon as you offer that alternative, they're going to be like, aha, next time I'm given this, I'll just say no and I'll get some Weetabix instead, you know, or porridge or whatever it is that's the alternative. And not that that's a problem to offer those foods, but offering alternatives just teaches them, I'll just refuse. And honestly, I've had some families who make 6 or 7 meals before their child goes, yeah, okay, I'll accept this one. You know, poor mum's exhausted. She's made all these different meals. The little one's not eating the same as the rest of the family. So, you know, I have so much information on my website about trying to deal with things like food refusal. So, and there's, you know, I could literally do a podcast on that alone.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, it must be one of the most common and most frustrating parts of parenthood. And I know I have it all to come as well. So thank goodness I'm armed with the tools. But it doesn't make the emotional grief almost for a parent when you can't make your child happy in that moment. There must be a lot to deal with. So do you have any recommendations on the best things they can make at home? What types of food would good meals to start?
So yeah, I'm a real big advocate as well of kind of family foods and eating together. You know, again, traditionally we always in the early days you will want to give them maybe things like start off with single taste of veggies, but then after they've kind of had those and they're getting on with eating, it really is about just trying to expose them to your own family foods and family eating. The more that you can bring them to the table, let them see you eating your foods, and let them have, even if it's just a part of it, doesn't have to be the whole lot, but let them eat the kinds of foods that you're eating and be really familiar with seeing you have a stick of broccoli, or, you know, some salmon with some pasta. You know, they will honestly, they observe everything. They're little sponges, and they will pick up on the fact that, oh, mummy has that pasta. I've seen her eating the salmon. I've watched the way that she puts it in her mouth, and I'm learning all the time from watching you eat. So the main thing I would say is, what do you eat as a family? Bring that to the table for your baby. Avoid the salt, avoid any added sugar. Don't go, you know, crazy with really hot spices, but small amounts of spice is absolutely fine in baby's food once they've had those first tastes. So what do you eat as a family? How can you adapt that so that your baby's going to have something similar to you? That's what I'd be saying.
The best tip, because I think a lot of people isolate the baby sometimes, whereas actually, like you said, if they're modelling and they're just learning from what mum and dad do, then they are watching, they are looking all the time.
Exactly. And you'll be a perfect role model for you as well. Like, you know, your little one will be sitting next to you, she'll be watching all your beautiful dinners.
Well, fingers crossed, because this is probably the stereotype that, that people expect the nutritionist to have the perfect baby.
I really, really do believe that it is often, you know, obviously I work with Joe and he's the same, you know, his little girl is as absolutely loves her food, and it's because he's a real foodie. Yeah. You know, I really, most of the time I find that parents who are foodies, who love their food, who eat a really balanced diet, it does have a knock-on effect, because your little one will just automatically role model what you do, and they'll see your excitement around food. You know, Raffy, sometimes I put food in front of him and he goes and I'm just like, oh yes, I love it, because he loves his food. He goes through phases where he doesn't, I promise you, but you know, over time he really just has loved his food.
I mean, that's so wonderful to hear. And I think one of the big fears, I'm just going to be honest and set out here, but I'm sure other people can relate, is when you leave your baby with someone else. So
completely.
Would you advise parents prep the food themselves to give to someone else? And do you put a list of rules in place? Because for all you know, this someone else may not know about this salt and sugar. And
yeah, absolutely.
Different generations had different ways of
and different
feeding.
Ideas. God, you know what? My mother-in-law was around last night and she told me that her mother-in-law had given my husband, when he was a baby, a bottle of tea and sugar. I was like, oh my God, I can't go.
Wow.
But it's so common. It is a really, really big stress for parents. And I have heard some horrendous examples of where, you know, that kind of respect isn't there and they just do whatever they want. It does happen. And I definitely, you know, like to try and address this. But the main thing I say is communication.
Yeah.
I think getting in there early so that it's not wham, bam, as soon as you offered food. Right, here's a list of your rules. Maybe start that conversation early. Talk about things like, oh, I heard today that this is really important for children. I heard today that diet is so important.
Listen to this podcast.
Listen to this podcast by Retrition. It's fascinating how important it is. Completely. But get in early. So that you're not starting, kicking off by going, boom, 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 here's your instructions. I would say give food ideas, you know, let them see what you're feeding baby. Because, you know, sometimes parents will think, what on earth? Your baby's having pasta with salmon and avocado. But actually, if they see your baby eating it and coping with it, they might go, okay, you know, they like it, they're enjoying it. So let them see that happening once you do introduce the food to them. Share as much research information as you can with them. And if you are worried, then packing something and saying, here's the food for them all for the day. You don't need to worry about it. Taking the trouble for you, there we go.
Yeah, I think that's especially for lots of people that perhaps aren't big fans of cooking in the kitchen
completely.
And if we move on to the subject of baby sickness, mm-hmm. So baby's been sick around feeding time. Could you explain why this happens pretty often and should a parent keep on feeding throughout this?
So do you mean genuinely, eating food and it, vomiting essentially?
Pretty much, yeah. And even if we actually, let's reverse that question and go right back to baby sickness during breast milk feeding and then move on to when you're actually weaning.
Yeah. So in terms of during breastfeeding, it does seem some babies, you know, we often hear them referred to as like sicky babies. Some babies just do have more of a reflux than others. So they find it a bit more difficult to keep down milk. There is a part of our anatomy that kind of closes off. And when some babies, that's just not very pronounced. So actually they're more likely to spit milk up. You know, it can actually be really difficult for parents sometimes. Sometimes babies do it and they are in pain as a result of it. So I would always be saying, try and get medical support. You know, talk to a doctor, talk to a GP. If you're not pleased with the advice you're getting, get help, because quite often it is easy for you to be, you know, oh, you've just got a sicky baby, off you go.
They're not getting the milk
and
in.
Completely. They might not be getting, or they might be in pain, or, you know, they might not be getting, enough in the way of food. So definitely, definitely get medical advice on that. Health visitors, GPs should be able to support you. When it comes to food, definitely in the early days, you might find some babies have a gag reflex that's much further forward than us as adults. And as you move throughout the weaning journey and baby gets more confident with food, that gag reflex just starts to internalise. It gets a bit lower, but that just isn't quite so pronounced. Some babies have a very sensitive gag reflex, and if they get anything in their mouth, even a puree, they may vomit and they may be sick. What I would say is it's really important to check those signs that your baby's ready. Make sure you really do think your baby's developmentally ready, and that they can take those solid foods or those purees. Just also be aware that there's no allergy. So that's why when we recommend introducing allergen foods, it's one at a time. And leave a few days in between each one. So other foods, you don't need to offer them one at a time. Once you've done your first food taste, you can offer, let's say, carrot and sweet potato in one day, fine. Any of the allergens, like dairy foods, like nuts, or nut butters or ground nuts, like fish, you would definitely be recommending introduce one at a time and leave a couple of days gap. So that if baby is sick or if there's any other response, you can, you know, almost immediately be able to tell, hopefully, that it was a reaction.
It may not be in a family. It may be something
Absolutely.
That mum doesn't have, dad doesn't have, and you could have a dairy intolerant child, even though both parents aren't.
I believe it's more common for children to have an allergy when they aren't necessarily at risk. We don't really know. It's a really, really big question. But it does seem to be quite common at the moment for lots of cow's milk protein allergies. Some allergies babies grow out of. So for example, things like cow's milk protein, an egg allergy, babies do tend to grow out of, but you need to see a registered dietitian or a specialist in allergen who will walk you through the process of things like reintroduction.
These home test kits, and worryingly I've had a few parents DM me about home test kits.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh.
For allergies for children, which is quite concerning.
Yeah.
So there is no legitimate way, is there, for doing that. You need to take them to see a health professional.
Absolutely. And I would be saying even more than that, you know, I've been talking about allergies a lot. I've been working with a couple of really brilliant dietitians who specialise in this field. So I've been talking about it quite a lot on my profile, and I've had lots and lots of questions. But the one thing I would really stress is that actually, and you know, don't get me wrong, I always praise GPs and I would always say go and see. But actually, there is quite a lot of new advice on allergies recently. And I've been getting a lot of feedback that healthcare professionals are not quite up to date on the allergen advice. So if you have concerns, if you feel your baby is at risk, if they have severe eczema, or if they have a current allergy, I would 100% be saying, see your GP and ask for a referral to a specialist. You need to try and see a specialist, whether that be an allergy dietitian, or whether that be an allergenist who works in, you know, in the NHS. Don't do it at home. Don't self-diagnose. You know, don't reintroduce foods that your baby has had an allergy to. Go and see someone who will hold your hand and talk you through all your next steps.
Yeah, solid advice. And like you say, it's not that we don't respect different healthcare
Absolutely
professionals.
Not.
It's just times are changing and we're so fortunate to have all this different information now, aren't we?
And the allergy stuff is really, really recent, you know. And I have had a lot of parents come to me saying that their GPs have told them they shouldn't be introducing allergens till 12 months plus. But actually, that is the opposite. The advice is that we should be trying to get allergens in early, before 12 months of age. So if your baby's at risk, go and see a GP as early as you can and get some help to start that introduction, basically.
Such invaluable advice, Charlotte. Completely. No, it's so important because it's one of the big worrying factors that parents can find. And I think if we do delve into a few of the key nutrients, let's say, for a child to be looking out for. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of talk that we both know about dairy-free diets in general, with a rise on now remember, plant-based is not the same as vegan. To everyone listening, they're very different things, but plant-based is a reduction, quite a big reduction compared to usual of animal produce and dairy. So for a parent wanting to what's the word instead of wean? We're going to reintroduce
doing complementary feeding or introducing solids. Yeah, but weaning's fine.
Even
the NHS do use it, so we're fine.
So when you are weaning or complementary feeding or whatever you want to call it, for a parent that doesn't want to feed their child dairy, it's a sustainability choice, ethical, many, many different reasons today, or animal produce, what are the key nutrients and how are they going to get those?
Yes.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good question. So that is, it seems to be really common, you know, and I'm absolutely sitting here saying that if you do decide to give your baby a plant-based diet, a vegetarian diet, or a vegan diet, you can do that successfully.
Yeah.
But it does take a lot more planning and it does take a lot more work and focus on some of those nutrients.
Yeah.
So some of those nutrients on a vegan diet you absolutely will need to look at include vitamin B12, which you can only get from animal foods.
And there's a lot of talk about vitamin B12. And we did a whole episode on actual vegan diets with a dietitian. And she reiterated the same thing, that guys, no matter what a Netflix documentary said, you're not going to get B12 from your vegetables.
No, completely.
There's a lot of myths about where it comes from.
Yeah. And the Vegan Society themselves, you know, say take a B12 supplement. I think the Vegan Society recommend a B12 supplement for the general population anyway. But if you aren't eating meat or dairy foods, you are going to be very, very limited and very unlikely to be able to get enough B12. So B12, you know, you can get that in fortified foods. A lot of the dairy alternatives do include fortified B12. Mm. But also you might need to consider a supplement for baby. Also iodine, you know, we've talked about iodine before. Mm. Iodine is another thing that comes mainly from fish and white fish and from dairy products. If your baby doesn't have either of those in their diet, you need to think of another source of iodine. And again, it's probably likely that it's going to have to be fortification
or tough. Supplements. There are, it would just be supplementing or a highly fortified product. And product, they're only just beginning to be putting iodine in, aren't they?
Completely. Well, I mean, if baby is having formula milk, they will be getting iodine in there. And if baby has your milk and you have enough iodine in your diet, they will get iodine from you too. But it's very, very difficult to tell if baby is getting enough. So I would be saying, yes, you probably need to look at supplementing. If your baby is vegan, not having animal products, no fish, no dairy, I think supplementing. You know, again, some foods are fortified, but absolutely plant milks, it's hairy. Some of them are, some of them aren't. Omega-3. We need to think about if your little one doesn't have fish, then you need to think about getting omega-3 in the diet. And that can come from things like ground walnuts, flax seeds and flaxseed oil. You know, again, ground chia seeds as well are a good source of that. But, you know, and these are foods that you can offer to your little one if they're in the appropriate form. But you would need to be offering them quite regularly in a
It's just so important.
Diet.
I mean, omega-3 and iodine both affect cognition to some degree.
Yeah.
So your baby's brain development.
Absolutely.
And I feel like there isn't enough information out there discussing this.
And you know what? There probably isn't enough research looking into it either and the significance of it. It's a really interesting field. But definitely, I think those are some nutrients I'd absolutely
be looking at. So we've got B12, iodine, omega-3.
Also, iron, you know, iron is one that's talked about a lot. Iron's very important. And if you're on a vegan or vegetarian diet, then it can be harder to absorb iron from some of those sources. However, I think there's a bit of a misleading, you know, that you can't get iron on a vegetarian diet. You can. You know, there are lots of foods like, for example, red lentils and green lentils, beans, some nut butters and ground nuts that are good sources of iron. Egg yolks also a really good source of iron too. So if your baby eats eggs, then that's another option.
And should they have it with vitamin C?
Yeah, so there is, again, there's some research that suggests that if you combine vitamin C at the same meal, that it can enhance absorption of iron. There is a bit of a question if that has an impact over the long term. Mm. However, it definitely, I would say if you are, you know, most of us would hopefully be combining, you know, our veg in the evening, we'll have vitamin C in it. Broccoli is a great source of veg. Fruits and vegetables, you know, if you're combining that in your little one's diet, along with things like lentils and beans and pulses and chickpeas or hummus or maybe tahini, you know, those are all great sources of iron. So include those, include some vitamin C with them, and hopefully you're winning.
I mean, invaluable advice again, and I think it just goes to show, because often the signs of a deficiency could not show for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the worrying thing. And it's
or ever, you know, things like IQ. There's a lot of research with iodine and IQ. You're not going to know the difference. If your baby has, you know, 2 IQ points more when they're 20, how would you ever know? A lot of it's invisible, isn't it, really?
Yeah. And yeah, as long as you kind of bulletproof your baby's diet and do what you can, that's the best thing you could do. So I think for my last question for you, if a child is going through a particularly difficult time, you know, you've done well so far and they have to follow a different type of diet, would you recommend the rest of the family follow suit just to support? Should everyone make that change? Perhaps they're all dairy intolerant in the family.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's difficult. I think I would always be recommending that your baby eats as similar diet to you as possible. So, you know, we've said less the sugar, less the salt. There's some fish like shark, swordfish and marlin that babies shouldn't really have.
Which, frankly, we don't really get in the UK.
No,
for any UK
absolutely,
listeners.
Exactly. And pregnant women shouldn't have those.
Yeah.
Also, honey is not recommended till babies are 1. So there are a few foods that need to be limited in baby's diet. I don't think we covered all of them earlier, but...
Well, yeah, because honey is sugar over again.
And yeah, absolutely.
It's very deceptive for people.
Completely. But honey also contains a type of bacteria that can actually cause infant botulism, which is incredibly rare, but quite serious. So the UK advice is not to offer honey before one. Mm. And lots of parents say to me, oh, but can I give them maple syrup and agave? And I'm like, no, that's still an added sugar. So please try and keep that off the menu as well, as long as possible.
And they don't really need it. What about birthday parties? What amazes me is when children are growing up, it must be so difficult, because even if your child's just 2 years old, they probably
avoiding.
Don't. Yeah, avoiding that amount of sugar at other people's places.
It's a tough one. I have to say, it's one we're going through at the moment, really, because, you know, Rafi is starting to be very aware now of, you know, he hasn't been up until now, but he's starting to be aware of what other children are eating and thinking, oh, why haven't I got that? So, you know, it does get difficult. But what my advice to parents would be, and actually I said this to someone this morning, think about what they're eating the majority of the time, because that's what matters. So if they go to a party and they have cake and crisps and you're going, they've never had that before, just remember that it is what they eat the majority of the time. And also in terms of their patterns of eating, what they see you eating day to day and what they eat as part of their diet with you day to day is going to have the biggest impact. Yeah. So you don't need to overly restrict. You know, sometimes overly restricting can actually have the opposite effect. But if we're able to kind of look at, you know, put it into context, what have they eaten this week? And if they've had a bit of cake at a party, don't worry about
it.
You know, obviously you want to be in control as much as you can. And, you know, we are really starting to get to the point, you know, where Rafi's at nursery and all the other kids have Shreddies and he still has Weetabix. And he's starting to be like, no, I'd quite like the Shreddies now. And I'm like, oh, all my hard work. But, you know, he's not there too often.
No.
And we've compromised at the moment. So he has Weetabix and then he'll have some sprinkles on top. So it might be Shreddies or it might be Rice Krispies. I'm not saying there's anything really wrong with them, but the Weetabix is a better option. It's lower in sugar, it's lower in salt, and it's higher in fibre and it's got more nutrients.
Again,
in
deceptive,
it.
But if you compare the back of the packs, you'll start to notice
this. Completely. Completely.
Right.
Well, sorry, I waffled on that
no,
one.
No, you didn't at all, because I think it's going to be so useful for everyone to hear your experiences just as much as the standard advice that we must give. But questions from our listeners. So Elaine has got one for you. So she has said, I go back to work when my baby is 6 months and I want to start weaning before. Would this be safe?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on what age your baby. I don't know what age you said before 6 months, but I'm not sure what age you're thinking to start. It depends on so many factors. You know, was your baby born prem? Is your baby born on time? You know, how early was your baby? Have you seen any of those signs for readiness? Because ultimately, I'd always be saying to a parent, if your little one can't hold themselves up, hold their head and neck steady, reach out and pick up foods and pop it in their mouth, and if they've got a really big tongue thrust reflex, I would be saying they're not going to be ready for solid food, so it's not ideal to start just yet. It's really hard because sometimes parents will say, oh, I'm going on holiday, do I wait? Because I'm going away for a month, do I wait or do I start before? You know, and ultimately you need to just check when your baby is ready, when they're showing you those signs that they're ready, rather than timing it around life, which I know is easier said than done.
Oh, definitely. Especially when you're working alongside everything else.
Completely.
This is an interesting one from Clarissa. Clarissa has said, yeah, don't worry, you've got this. How important is it to remove the skins from fruit and vegetables before giving it to babies?
Good question. Definitely early on I would, and that's more to build up your confidence as a parent, as well as allowing baby to kind of show you, you know, a part of responsive feeding is allowing them to show you their own abilities, so you can start to judge, do you know what, my baby's got this, you know. And it depends on the types of skin. So for example, I would always say a cucumber, you know, their skin's pretty tough, I would say remove that, certainly in the early days of your little one. Things like pear, again, it can be tough to chew. If you eat a pear, sometimes I'll get the skin or kind of get stuck in the back of my mouth a little bit. So anything that is a bit tough, fibrous, might be difficult for a baby who is simply learning how to chew to break down, I'd say remove it initially and just see how your baby gets on. You know, your baby will start to develop that kind of ability to bite and chew and start to grind food down as they move through the weaning journey. They'll copy you. Mm. And as soon as they start to get that ability, then you can start to offer the kind of skin on again, especially once they've got a few teeth as well, which come around 6 months usually.
Very important. And Veronica's added, which is something we definitely should touch on, choking hazards. Mm, I mean, how definitely. Aware should I be, and definitely. what size food am I giving my child?
Well, I mean, again, I could be here all day talking this, but when it comes to, first of all, I'd say anything can be a choking hazard, okay? So some people are really funny on like, that's a choking hazard. My son genuinely choked on some watermelon.
Wow.
Eating a big chunk of watermelon. He was about one. Luckily, was being held at the time by a nurse who
that could not have been luckier.
And I was nowhere near the scene, so I have no idea. So all good. But yeah, lots of things choking. So in the UK, we recommend no whole nuts. We recommend no whole grapes until baby is five. You can offer ground nuts, nut butters, and you can slice grapes quartered lengthways and give those to baby fine. But those are some of the things. Hard sweets as well are going to be difficult. Anything like raw apple, raw carrot is going to be a choking hazard in the early days. But again, it's about building your confidence on what your baby can do. Start soft. I normally say with veggies, you want to start with them being the roughly size and shape of an adult finger so baby can grasp it and just have a little bit pointing out at the top that they can then help feed themselves to.
And would you part cook it so it's softer?
So you would absolutely cook. I actually would say in the early days, overcook.
Mm.
So don't worry too much about the fact that you're losing nutrients. Yeah. This is not about nutrients. This is about getting them used to the process of eating. So I normally say with those first veggies, cook them so that they don't have bite. You want them to be super soft so that you can squidge them between your finger and thumb. And if you can squidge them between your finger and thumb in those first few weeks and months of weaning, that's ideal, until your baby starts to develop what we call the pincer grip, which is around 9 months, where they can actually pick things up with their finger and thumb themselves. And once they've done that and they've mastered kind of chewing ability, they will they'll then start to be able to take on slightly harder foods. But all babies different, go at their pace.
What a journey a baby goes on, eh?
Really, you're probably thinking right now, oh my God, where do I even start? But I promise it will all just come.
It will all just fall into place. At least I'll have lots of squishy peppers, which I love.
Yeah.
Adore all of those.
Skin off peppers would be good to begin with. Yeah.
There we go. The last question is from Sadie, and she said, is there a ratio of what food groups should be in your baby's diet?
Good question.
Oh, these are good.
That.
I'm loving
Brilliant.
The listeners today.
I've done a post on this before. Yes, so ultimately, we're not feeding babies based on the Eat Well guide, but looking at food groups is important. So once baby's established on three meals a day, they've had their first foods, they're starting to really eat, you know, mini meals, then it's ideal to start thinking about balancing those foods. So I would normally say on a plate, try and include something like a veg or a fruit, something like a carbohydrate, and that can be white or brown or whole grain, but vary that. So you don't want it all to be fibrous and all to be whole grain. And then a protein or iron rich food alongside. So it might be something, let's say, like bread with some egg and some pepper fingers, just as a little example. So try and vary. Remember, fat's important in your baby's diet too. And so you can cook in oil if you're making food. So baby can absolutely cook in oil. You can add things like cheese or yogurt or full fat dairy into baby's food, as long as they're not allergic to it. But ultimately, a veg, a protein and a carb, trying to include those at each meal.
Perfect. Well, I hope this has set everybody up, and we're now going to move on to the fact or fiction round.
Oh yeah, I messed this up last time.
No, you didn't.
I kept saying fact or fiction, and then we'd have to go back, so fingers crossed I get it right this time.
All right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Eggs are safe for babies to eat when cooked.
Fact.
Cow's milk can be given to babies as a drink.
Not until 12 months, so fiction.
Babies don't need 3 meals a day.
Fiction.
And is that just because you want to feed them frequently? Or
yeah, I mean, it varies. Some babies will maybe need feeding a little bit more than that. But ultimately, getting them into the kind of routine we have is ideal. Some babies will be like, no, I want five.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it's going at baby's own pace. But 3 meals a day is a good starting off point.
There we go. Salt and sugar is okay in baby foods.
fiction.
It can take at least 10 times for your baby to get used to foods.
Fact. Sometimes more.
There you go. Yeah. Perseverance, everyone. Perseverance. Gluten should be avoided for all children.
Fiction.
Thank you. Babies naturally prefer sweeter tastes.
Fact.
You can only introduce new foods to your baby every 3 days.
Fiction. Only with allergens.
Okay. Tap water is dangerous for babies.
Fiction. From 6 months, you don't have to boil and cool it. You can offer it straight from the tap.
Brilliant. If your baby eats well, they will sleep well.
Fiction.
Ooh,
not necessarily. Absolutely. I mean, there is some research that suggests that if babies eat a really well-balanced diet during the day and they get their 3 meals, they get enough energy during the day, they don't necessarily need to wake up for night feeds. Doesn't always work that way, you know.
No.
Sometimes babies wake for so many reasons. Comfort, you know, maybe they just had a funny feeling. Maybe they're tired. Maybe
Could
they're cold.
Hot.
Maybe they've been to the toilet. Like a million different things. So, yes, food can play a role. And if baby is getting enough calories during the day, then they're essentially is no reason for them to need to wait during the night after 6 months of age. But that's not always the case, you know. Baby, no. Raffi still wakes sometimes during the night now. Like, he might have a nightmare. You know, he's 2.5, but he has a nightmare. Or, you know, the other day he was asleep with a pillow on his head and he woke up and must have just been like, what's happening? And just screamed for me. So, you know, I promise you, they don't always sleep through the night.
Oh, my heart. Charlotte, that was a brilliant fact or fiction round.
Good. I'm pleased. I smashed it that time.
You did smash it this time. We've had practice. That was great. That does wrap up the episode, but we're going to finish with our food for thoughts today. So I think I will start by probably saying that having a baby and bringing them up, it's going to be a challenge. It's not going to be easy. And I think, as we've discussed, if you are organized as much as you can be amidst the chaos and patient, I think patience is something that's really stuck out to me from today's episode. That's going to help. And I think there's a concept or an idea that's glamorized, especially on social media now, of this fuss-free feeding time where everything's perfect, everything's in harmony. I think if you just try and remember that it is a process, it's a big learning process for your child to go through all of that and acknowledge the time rather than being hurried or even overthinking the nutrition.
Yeah, completely. Completely.
Because
this can drive you mad as a parent.
I think it would be something I would have to consider that would probably drive me mad that I'll have to really work on. So just encourage your baby to enjoy food. And I think something that stuck out for me was Charlotte's real emphasis on try and eat together, make it a fun thing, a positive aspect of life. But that would be my little take-home message from today's episode. So Charlotte, if you could leave our listeners with a food for thought, one thing you think will help.
Oh God, so many things. I think, there's so many things. I think just a couple of things, like I say. First of all, I would say your confidence is really key. You know, I do get this sounds like an awful lot, but it's really just about learning. Remember, you're learning, they're learning, you're learning together. You're not going to go wrong. You know, it's all about just going through that journey with themselves and building your confidence. So do a bit of reading beforehand, get your confidence up, and it can make all the difference. And the second thing is really what you said. You know, I haven't emphasized it enough during this podcast, but have fun with it. The more that you have fun and the more that you make a mealtime environment an enjoyable place to be, do you know what? The more A, your baby will want to be there, and B, the more they will love their foods. So enjoy the time. Try not to stress. Try not to put pressure on mealtimes. Enjoy it.
What about music? That just popped in my head then. So I thought, oh, I'll have a musical dinner time.
Calming. Make that mealtime just fun and enjoyable. Honestly, even if your baby's not eating, you know, you getting stressed and sitting there being like, come on, please try it, please. All that's going to do is have the opposite effect. So if they're not eating, okay, fine, I'll sit back, let's put some nice music on, let's chill, I'm going to eat my food in front of you, I'm going to smile at you, you know, make it enjoyable, because I promise you it makes all the difference in the world.
That's a wonderful food for thought. Thank you so much
for
coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, I loved it.
If you enjoyed this episode, you're going to absolutely love what's coming next week. So make sure you click subscribe to be the first to hear it. And please do leave a 5-star review. It really does help to get this podcast out there so that we can reach higher highs in the charts and hopefully be able to help more people. For more information about my Retrition Clinic, books, healthy recipes, events, retreats, and so much more, please visit Retrition.com and follow me at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.